Thank you, Dov. Birshus Marino Rabbeinu Rav Shachter Shlita, Birshus Rabbi Berman, Birshus Rabbi Schwartz. Today, I'd like to discuss the topic of whether an individual residing in a community, in a city, whether this individual has to help support communal institutions, communal services, and whether there are any limitations to that obligation. If we have time, I would also like to discuss briefly whether one's wealth affects how much one has to financially support such institutions. So our goal is to look at some sources. We're going to address a question on the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch based on these sources and hopefully have a potential resolution to properly understand the Ramah. And this is all in the spirit of Shemitah with the focus on community and taking care of one another's needs. So, without further ado, the first source is a Mishnah in Maseches Bava Basra. Source 1, the Mishnah is on Daf Zayin and Beis. Says the Mishnah, Kofen oso livnos beis shar v'delos l'chatzer. The Mishnah is talking about people residing in a chatzer, in a courtyard. They're it's a type of partnership. So they can force each other to build Beishar, Delis, and Delis Lachatzer, types of security to prevent different types of damages. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Omer, Lo Kol Chatzir Su'ilis Beishar. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel thinks that there's some limitation. Not every Chatzir is subject to this din. We're not going to discuss that. The next part of the Mishnah says, Kofenoso Livenos Le'ir, Choma, Tulasayim, Uvriach. Says the Mishnah, this is not limited to a Chatzir. It also applies to people residing in a city. The residents of the city have to financially pay for the security of the city, the walls, the doors, and the locks. And again, Rav Shem will think there's a limitation. Not every city needs a wall. Again, we're not going to discuss that. So the implication they get from the Mishnah is that people residing in common quarters, let's say you have a chatzer, people residing in a common courtyard, or residents of a city have an obligation to help support at least security. And what's the nature of this obligation? So the conventional understanding in the Achronim is that this is a type of shutfis, a type of partnership. Even though they didn't necessarily agree to obligate themselves to financially support the security of the city, nevertheless, there's an understanding that people residing in common quarters, such as a chatzir, or a city, have to help support the needs of the city, such as security. That's the impression that you get from the Mishnah. But we don't necessarily know that it extends beyond security. Does it apply to other tzarchei tzibur, other communal needs, other communal institutions? So in source number 2, the Tosefta will read it inside in a moment, but basically what the Tosefta says in source 2 is that it's not necessarily limited to security. It also applies to building shuls, to buying svarim, to making sure the water systems work properly, so we have to have functioning and clean water. So the impression that one gets from, again, the Mishnah and the Tosefta is that anyone, if you have people living amongst each other, there's an obligation, again, based on some type of implicit partnership, that they have to help financially support each other's needs. Now the question is, and this is what we want to properly understand, is whether this is limited to institutions that the individual benefits from. Meaning, let's say you have an elderly woman who no longer uses the community mikveh. Does she have to financially support the community mikveh? Or can she argue, I never use the mikveh anymore, so why should I have to pay for that? Or you have a couple who sent all their kids to the community school, the local school, and everyone graduated. Do they have to continue financially supporting the school, or can they argue, we no longer use the school, we no longer use its services, so why should we have to make sure that the school is able to function? Also, Talmidim who leave Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yiskol Chanan, do they have to continue supporting it beyond their tuition years?
Yes.
The conclusion will be yes. Okay, so this is what we want to understand. So, just a spoiler alert: the early sources that we're going to go through three makoros that seem to imply that one only has to help support these institutions if they directly benefit from them. Number one is this Tosefta in Maseches Bava Metzia, source number two. Says the Tosefta, Mi sheyesh lo bayis b'chatzer acheres, b'nei chatzer acheres mishabdin oso, la'asos imahin delas naga or minol l'chatzer. So if a person has a house in a certain courtyard, but he doesn't actually live in that courtyard, the people of that courtyard can force him to pay to financially support the security. Ushar kol dvarm ein nechon l'chufo. But other things they can't. Apparently only security. Im ha'yashar iman ba'osa chatzer, then mishab ne'osa ala kol. But if he was living amongst them, where it sounds like he was directly benefiting from the security, then they can force him to pay for the security. Again, further says the Tosefta, mish yesh lo chatzer bi'ir acheres. Let's say a person has a courtyard, a house, something in another city. If a person has a house in a certain city, let's say he has a house in New York, but he lives in California, so the people in New York can force him to dig wells, basically make sure that there's functioning water, there's running water in the city. But other things they can't. So what's the chiluk between security and water, which seem to be things that the B'nai Ha'ir can force all of the residents to contribute to financially support, regardless of what they're directly benefiting from, and other Tzarchei Ha'ir, Tzarchei HaTzibor, which seem to be limited to whether the person is directly benefiting from them. So the Nemuki Yosef over there in Maseches Bava Basra, Daf Heyom and Beis in the Dapei Harif explains, we don't have to read it inside, but the Nemuki Yosef basically says that the reason, let's take the example of with the functioning water. If a person has real estate in New York and there's no functioning water, even though he lives in California and he's not directly benefiting from the water, nevertheless, his real estate is going to depreciate in value. It's going to go down, and therefore, he does directly benefit from having functioning water in the city. Therefore, the B'nai Ha'ir, even though he doesn't live there, can force him to contribute, to financially contribute to the waterworks of the city. So too with the chatzer. If there's no security, a person's not going to want to own a house in a city with no security, because maybe his house is going to be destroyed. Therefore, again, he financially benefits by having security in the city, even though he doesn't directly benefit from the security. So the impression that you get from the Nemuka Yosef and this Tosefta, his explanation of this Tosefta, is that only if one directly benefits from the institution, the service that the city is providing, only then does he have to contribute financially to the institution. Another raya, another source that seems to imply that one only has to financially support the Tzarchei HaTzibor if he directly benefits, is the Gemara there in Bava Basra and Daf Zayin Amabez in source 4. The Gemara has a question. When we collect, and this maybe we'll discuss if we have time at the end of this year, money for the security, how do we divide it up? Is it a flat rate that everyone has to pay, a set price for the security? Let's say the annual security cost is $10,000, $100,000, whatever it is. So we divide it up equally amongst all the citizens, all the residents of the city? Or do we say, no, the wealthier have to pay more? Why? So the implication, the Gemara has a Sibai in source 4, Bominei Rabbi Lazar Mir Rabbi Yochanan in source 4, Kishen Govin Lafi Nefashos Govin, Odim Lafi Shvach Mamon Govin. When they collect money for the security, do they collect Lafi Nefashos, which is a flat rate, each person has to pay a set amount, Odim Lafi Shvach Mamon Govin, based on how much money a person has in the city? Omer Lei Lafi Mamon Govin, Ve'lazar B'nei Kva Bamas Meiros. The Gemara concludes that we collect lefi shvach mamon. And then the Gemara goes on to qualify. Maybe, you know, there's some other variable. But basically what the Gemara says, that it depends on how much money a person has in the city. Why? Why should that be the determining factor of how much a person has to pay? So the Rishonim explain, because the person who has more money in the city has more to gain from the security of the city. If the city is insecure, and there's no it runs the risk of an army coming and looting the city, the person who has more money has more to lose. So therefore, the person with more money, the wealthier, those who have more money in the city, have to pay more for the security. So the impression that one gets from this Gemara, again, Bava Basra, Zayin and Beis, is that one has to pay for the tzarchi hatzi, or tzarchi ir, if they benefit. That's why the amount of benefit one gets should determine how much they have to pay. If benefiting from the institution had no say in terms of whether a person has to pay, it doesn't really make so much sense to say that a person should have to pay more if they benefit more. And one other source, which implies that that having to financially support tzarchei tzibur is limited to when a person directly benefits, is the Gemara over there, the same daf, later on the bottom of the Amud, in source 5, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya Rama Deshua de Rabbanan. Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, I believe the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, wanted to make the Rabbanan, the Tamid Chachamim of the city, pay for the wall, for the security of the city. Omar Rish Lakish, Rish Lakish said to him, Rabbanan lo tzricha netirusa. Rabbanan don't need protection. The Gemara brings a bunch of sources to prove this, that apparently Tamid Chachamim don't need regular protection. Their Torah and Meis and Tovim protect them, and therefore they don't need the security of the city. So argues Rish Lakish, therefore they shouldn't have to pay for the security of the city because they don't need it. So again, the Gemara seems to be assuming that one only has to pay and financially support communal institutions, city services, if they directly benefit from them. Okay. So now the problem is a comment of the Rama in Shulchan Aruch. The Rama in Simen Kuf Samach Gimel in Source 6 quotes the Mahari Mintz, Rabbi Yehuda Mintz. Rabbi Yehuda Mintz was a posek in the 15th century, in the 1400s. He was the Rav in Padua for a number of years, which is in northern Italy. He's famous for the Rama quotes him in Hilchos Purim when discussing the topic of whether cross-dressing is permitted in the context of Purim. So the Mari Mintz is the one who is Mekel, and Rav Shechler can correct me, but the Mari Mintz is Mekel in that regard, so I think that's where many people know his name from that psak. I think less people know him for this psak, but this is also a psak of the Mari Mintz. So the Rama in Simen Kuf Samach Gimel says, and this is just an abbreviated quote from the Rama, Kol Tzorcha Ha'ir, in Source 6, Afal Pisha Miktsasan Einan Tzrichin, all of the needs of a city, even though there are some who don't need this tzorech, they don't need it, they don't benefit from it, kegon beis chasnus o mikvah, a wedding hall, person has all their children married off, so they no longer need the services of the wedding hall, or a mikvah, an elderly woman or a man who generally doesn't go to the mikvah, v'chadome, afil hochi tzrichin litein chalkan. Nevertheless, even though they don't need it, nevertheless, they have to pay their dues to support this Beis Chasnus and the Mikvah. And if you look in the Mahari Mintz, it's not limited to Beis Chasnus and Mikvah. It's anything that the city determines that they need. The members of the residents of the city or the Tzibor have to support this. Now, the question is, this seems to be problematic. In light of the three sources that we just quoted, the Tosefta with the explanation of the Nukei Yosef, the Gemara in Bava Basra and Dav Zayin about Lefi Shvach Mamon, and the Gemara about Rabbanan Lotzricha Netirusa, all implied that a person only has to help financially support communal institutions if they directly benefit. So how can the Rama, quoting from the Mahari Mintz, say that regardless of whether a person benefits or needs the communal institution, like the mikveh or the Beis Chasnus, regardless of whether he needs it, he has to support it, has to financially support it. That's the question that we have to address. So truth be told, if you look in the if you look up the Mahari Mintz himself, the actual tshuva, we don't have too many tshuvas of the Mahari Mintz left. Apparently he wrote a lot of tshuvas, but there's a collection with his grandson or his great-grandson, the Maharam Padua. So the Mahari Mintz in the tshuva discussing this also says that, you know, somehow people indirectly benefit from the mikveh. That apparently there was a minhag for women to go to the mikveh on Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur as well. So even the elderly women use the mikveh and men use the mikveh. But that doesn't seem to be the driving force behind the psak of the Mahari Mintz. It sounds, if you look at the Mahari Mintz, it sounds like the Ramah, really, that regardless of whether a person needs it, a person can make up all the excuses they want, nevertheless, they have to support the Tzarchi HaTzibur. And the question is why, in light of these Gemaras. So one can suggest, perhaps, that there are different types of tzarchi ha-tzibur. There are different types of institutions. There are some that the rove of the tzibur, or the elected officials who were elected based on the majority, they decide that they need a certain thing. They need a park. They need a certain building to be erected. But it's not necessarily something that's inherently a need, a chiv on the tzibur, on the city, to establish. So that's one type of tzorech hatzibur. But there's another type of tzorech hatzibur where it could be that they're necessary for every Jewish city, for anyone who wants to reside in a certain city. There are certain institutions that have to exist there. What's the source of such an idea that there are certain institutions that have to exist in a city in order to allow people to live there? It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin in Source 7. The Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis. The Gemara there is talking about the size of a city that's chayiv in establishing a proper Sanhedrin. How many residents need to reside in the city to be considered an ear that then needs to establish a Sanhedrin? So the Gemara then quotes a brisa discussing a similar topic. That's here in Source 7. Visanya, the brisa says, Kol ear shein ba Asar dvarm halalu ein talmid chacham rasha lador besocha. Any city that doesn't have these 10 things, a talmid chacham, presumably, it's proper for everyone, any yare shemayim, to live in a city, or he has to live in a city that has these 10 things. What are they? Based in makin va'onshin, a proper based in that's able to give out punishment for those who commit averos that warrant punishment. The kupa shel tzedaka nigves b'shnayim mischalakes b'shlosha, a proper charity fund that's able to give out money to those that need it. Ubeis haknesses, a shul. Beis hamerchatz, a shvitz, and a place that people can clean themselves. Beis hakise, a bathroom. Rofe, doctor. V'uman, a craftsman. V'lavlar, scribe. Mulami tinokos, and a rebbe for the talmidim. Okay, and the Rabbi Kiva has a comment, but we're not going to get into that now. So you see from this Gemara that there are certain institutions that every city needs to have. So one could push back and say, no, maybe this is only if a person is going to directly benefit from all these things. A person is going to benefit from a based in residing in the city that's making sure that everything is running kedasu kedin. And a shul, and a beis hamerchatz. But if you look in the comment of the Yad Ramah, there in Source 8, the Yad Ramah is only commenting on one of these things, but presumably it applies to all of the institutions that are mentioned on this list. The Yad Ramah was Rav Meir Abu Lafia. He lived in the beginning of the 12th century. He was a contemporary of the Rambam and a very strong opponent of the Rambam. But he has a classic on Maseches Sanhedrin and Maseches Bava Basra. So the Yad Ramah, over there commenting on the Gemara in Source 8, says, "Umalam b'tinokos, kidei sheyimtza malami levanov." So a person has to live in a city with malam b'tinokos, teachers, in order to teach his children. "V'lo od," says the Rama, "ela she'ein roi l'tamid chacham ador ela b'makom Torah." Probably he's paraphrasing the Mishnah in Maseches Avos in Source 9 on the other side of the page, Rabbi Nurai Omer Havigolo Makom Torah, that a person should always reside in a Makom Torah. So you see from this comment of the Yad Ramah that a person has to make sure that Rebbeim, Talmidei Chachamim, exist in the city and they're being supported by the city in order to be able to live there. And presumably this applies to the other institutions as well. Beis HaKnesses, Beis HaMerchatz, Beis HaKisei. All these are institutions that every good, proper Jewish city has. And therefore, in order for a person to be able to live there, they need to exist. So therefore, perhaps, the Ramah thinks that a person has to support these, financially support these, regardless of whether they directly benefit from them. Because in order for them to live there, they need to these need to exist. So therefore, they are benefiting from them in a certain extent, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to live there. Another source is the Chavetz Chaim in one of his Svarim, many Svarim, called Taras Yisrael, in Source 10. The Chavetz Chaim speaks about the need to have a mikvah in the city. Let's read it inside. Tzarech lizar ma'od shelo lador be'ir she'ein shal mikvah k'sheira. A person has to be very careful to make sure that they're not residing in a city that does not have a mikvah k'sheira. Va'afilo misha talibo tiflei. A person, even if a person has children that are dependent on him, v'ikar parnasos lefi maris einav talei rak b'malkam hazeh. A person says, I can only make my parnas in this city that doesn't have a mikvah k'sheira. Says the Chavetz Chaim, lo yachlef olam omeid la'ad ba'olam over. A person should not decide to, should not choose this world instead of the world to come. And it's clear from the Chavetz Chaim and other sources that this is regardless of a person who actually uses the mikvah. A person has to, there's a letter from Rabbi Kiveger, that a person has to make sure that there's a proper mikvah tara in the city, regardless of whether they use it. Again, one of these institutions that go above and beyond what the community, what the city actually decides what they need. So again, we've just shown, perhaps, and I forgot to mention, the Rambam in Hilchos Deos quotes that Gemara in Sanhedrin LaHalacha, that a Talmid Chacham, and anyone for that matter, must live in a city that has these 10 institutions. So we've seen that there are two types of institutions, right? There is a communal institution that let's say the Shiva Tuvei Ir, the elected officials decide that the city wants to have a park or a playground, something that that they decide that they need. And then there are other institutions that are inherently necessary for any Jewish city. So perhaps one can argue that when it comes to Tzrachim that the city decides they need, or the elected officials decide they need, then we follow the majority, and the miut, the minority, have to pay regardless of whether they benefit. Oh, I'm sorry, they have to pay only if they benefit from those services. However, when there are certain institutions, like mikvah or beis chasnus that the Ramah quotes from the Mari Mintz, or all the institutions that are on the list, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Brisa quoted in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, it could be that all of those institutions, regardless of whether one directly benefits from said institution or service, you have to financially support it. So maybe that's how we can resolve the Ramah and the other sources. Again, we had a stira. The Ramah quoted from the Mari Mintz that a person has to support these institutions regardless of whether they benefit from them. Yet we had the Tosefta with the Nimuke Yosef, the Gemara in Bava Basra and Dav Zayin and Beis regarding Rabban Lotzrichin et Tirusa and Lefi Shvach Mamon. All these sources seem to indicate that a person only has to pay if they directly benefit, a steer with the Ramah. So perhaps what we can say is that there are different types of tzrachim. When it comes to things that the city decides they need, maybe only those who benefit from them. However, when it comes to fundamental institutions that are necessary for every city to have, for example, like we started off with, the elderly woman who uses the mikvah, who doesn't use the mikvah anymore, or the couple who no longer sends their kids to the local school because they all graduated. These are institutions that every Jewish city needs. A mikvah tahara, a school, a yeshiva, a beis hakneses. It could be that that's what the Ramah is saying from the Mari Mintz, that even though the person doesn't claims they don't need them, nevertheless, they have to financially support them. Okay. Any questions so far?
Is there any difference between like a mikvah and a school in the sense that a mikvah, like once you're done using it, you never get any benefit from the school? I don't know, maybe it's too external, but like you're always benefiting per se from the education that you had, maybe in the rebbeim that you still have a connection with, or the friends that you made there.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, that could be. That by a school, even though if a person is not in the classroom, in the yeshiva, in the base medrash, but nevertheless, the information, the knowledge, the hashpa that they got from the school, the yeshiva goes with them the rest of their life. That could be, as opposed to the mikvah, it's when you use the mikvah. That could be for sure. But for a base HaKnesses, you have to probably, unless the base HaKnesses also has a hashpa on a person.
Are you talking about this just one base HaKnesses or one base sefer? Do you have multiple?
That's an excellent question. So I'm not getting into that. That makes it a little more complicated. Rav Moshe has a tshuva. Rav Moshe has a tshuva in Chelek Aleph of Choshen Mishpat, where he was asked about. There was a small town called Muncie that was just starting up, and they had some questions. They had some questions to ask him about how they want to establish their town, their city. So someone asked him. They daven at the local yeshiva. And they never go to the community shul. So do they have to support the community shul? He was asked regarding that. I'm not sure. If this, to keep it simple, I'm talking about there's one community shul, there's one school. When it comes to a mikvah, so Rav Moshe has another tshuva, that let's say there was a mikvah in town that was 2 miles away, that everyone could theoretically get there. Definitely during the week they can drive there. And on Shabbos, it's a bit of a walk, but it's a big tircha. So Rav Moshe was asked, it's the next tshuva in Choshen Mishpat, I think Sim Mimala, something like that. Rav Moshe was asked whether they can force all of the residents of the city to help build a new mikvah that's going to be closer in proximity so that people can walk there more benachas on Shabbos. It's going to be a little nicer. Can we force the residents to pay for the mikvah? So that's I did see the Rav Moshe discuss that, and Rav Moshe thinks that they can force them. The question is, how much do we force the residents to pay? That's going to, if we have time, to get into the second part of the shir. But Rav Moshe says that even though there was a mikvah that was usable, but since it was a bit of a tircha to get there on Shabbos, that was enough of a tzorech to force the residents to build a new mikvah. So it could depend on the different variables in terms of whether how many people use the different shuls. Yeah, I'm not sure.
The Rite Sanhedrin only lists 10 things that are necessary for the community.
So right.
Is it possible to say that there are more than that, and just Tana Kashia or something like that?
That's what I'm arguing. Yeah, because it doesn't say Beis Chasnas. It doesn't say Beis Chasnas. And Beis Chasnas is something that the Ramah says, but the Braisa in Sanhedrin does not list that. So I'm suggesting that there are certain things that that need to be there, and this is an unexhaustive list. I'm not sure if one can say such a thing, but I'm suggesting that, yeah. Yeah, this is a list of 10 basic things that every city needs, but depending on Lafi HaMakom, Lafi HaZman, it makes sense that you need a wedding hall for people to be able to get married. Every Jewish city needs people to get married, so... So it makes sense that should be something there. It's not a practical, it's not a thing that we decided that we need a new park. It's nice and it's very helpful and it's important, but it's not something that's inherently necessary for a Jewish city to function. Okay, what time are we supposed to stop? Does anyone know? 11:40. Okay, so very briefly getting into the next topic. The next part of the shir, whether the wealthy have to pay more for it. So once we've established that there a person has to pay for support tzarchi atzibur, sometimes only if they benefit from them directly, other times even if they don't benefit from them directly. A person is a resident of a city, lives in a chatzer, part of a tzibur, they have to help financially support the institutions that the tzibur has and the services they have that the tzibur has to offer. Now the question is whether this is a flat rate when we're collecting. Let's say the yeshiva is trying to raise $1.5 million. So do we go to everyone in the YU community and take a survey and divide it up evenly and ask everyone to pay X amount of money? Or do we say, no, a person makes X amount of money, so therefore they have to pay this amount. And if a person makes Y amount of money, they have to pay this amount. It depends on the wealth of the person. Someone, Zev Jarashow, pointed out to me that actually there is a school, Westchester Day School, where they have a tuition bracket. That instead of what's normally done is that there's a tuition of $15,000, and then those who need financial help can go to the financial office, embarrass themselves, and ask for some more money. But apparently at Westchester Day School, there is a bracket, or let's say you have a family that makes sacha kol, $150,000, so they have to pay a certain percentage of their income. They only have to pay up to 10% of their income, and then they max out. And then you have a family on the other extreme that makes $1 million. They have to pay a larger percentage of their income. So not only are they going to pay more money, they're going to pay a larger percentage of their income. So that's very interesting, idea. But clearly it's speaking to this idea that the wealthy should have to pay more for a service, even though they receive the same benefit as the less wealthy. So I don't have any sources for this on this source sheet. I didn't think we were going to have time to get into it, but I'll discuss outside briefly a tshuva of Rav Moshe. So Rav Moshe points out in the same tshuva about the mikvah, he was asked again whether we can force the residents of a city to build a new mikvah, even though we have a mikvah on the other side of town. They want to build a new mikvah that's closer, that's more usable, more user-friendly, it's a little nicer. So the question is, one, can we force them to build it? And number two, how much do we collect from each individual? Is there a flat rate, or does it depend? Is there a bracket depending on how wealthy a person is? So Rav Moshe said, yes, we can. In terms of the first question, we can force them to pay. The question is how much. So Rav Moshe points out from the earlier poskim that there are really three possibilities. There is lefi mamon, there's lefi nefashos, and there is chatzi chatzi. Lefi mamon means that depending on how wealthy a person is, that's going to determine how much they have to pay to support the mikvah, the school, the shul. Lefina fashos means it's a flat rate that we're going to say. Let's say the institution has a budget of $1 million, so we're going to figure out how many people are shayach to this institution and should help support it. And then we're going to divide it evenly. That's Lefina Fashos. And then the Rav Moshe quotes from the Ramah and the earlier poskim that there was a minug, apparently, when it comes to these supporting these institutions, to make it half and half. Why? Why should we make it half and half? Meaning we'll take a budget. Half of the budget will be flat rate for everyone. The other half will depend on how wealthy the individuals are. So the poskim understand, the Magen Avraham and the Taz, they say that the basis for this pshara, this compromise of half and half, is because, think about it, the wealthier are going to be more willing to pay more money to make something nicer, make something more aesthetically pleasing. Also, to avoid tircha, they want to make something more convenient. So to make something more aesthetically pleasing and to make it more convenient is going to cost more money. The wealthier are going to be more willing to pay that money as opposed to the less wealthy. So therefore, Rav Moshe explains from the early Achronim that every budget is divided half and half. Half of it is going to be a flat rate that we're going to collect from everyone equally, and the other half we're going to determine who are the wealthier, they're going to pay more, and the less wealthy will pay less. So Rav Moshe has a rule that it depends on which type of institution we're talking about, which type of tzorech. If we're talking about an individual's obligation, let's say a mikvah. Everyone has to use a mikvah. That's not a chiyuv on the tzibor to have a mikvah. I mean, it is a chiyuv on the tzibor to have a mikvah, but it's a chiyuv on individuals to use the mikvah. So there, says Rav Moshe, it makes sense that we should really collect lefi mamon. Why? Because each individual is obligated to use it. Therefore, they really should have to pay for it. Says Rav Moshe, therefore, depending on how wealthy a person is, their individual wealth will determine how much they have to pay towards that institution. However, you have certain institutions which are not really chiyuvim on the individual. There are chovas hatzibur. Let's say to have a chazen, a shliach tzibur for the yom neroim. So there, it's not an individual's obligation. The tzibur has to offer a communal tefillah to Hashem. Therefore, since it's a tzibur obligation, or let's say a beis haknesses, or Moshe proves that the chiyuv to build a shul is not an individual's obligation, rather it's a chiyuv on the tzibur to build a beis haknesses. Really, you can have individuals to get a minyan together and daven anywhere, but it's a communal obligation, the tzibur's obligation, the city's obligation to build a shul. So these are all chiyuvei tzibur. There, Moshe says, the starting point really should be lefi nefashos. A flat rate for everyone. Rav Moshe points out, though, that practically speaking, like the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch say, that the minhag seems to be always because of this concern of, you know, the wealthy are willing to pay more for the aesthetics and the convenience, and the less wealthy are not. So therefore, the minhag was nispashate. The minhag developed that we always do lefi mamon and lefi nefashos half and half. So I don't know what the practical the minhag is in our communities, but these are the basic guidelines for when collecting funds for communal institutions. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, how does it work to like force, like the base of the community or like the rebbeim of the community?
Yeah, the leaders of the community. So let's say you have rabbanim. Or let's say the Rabbanim and the community appoint elected officials, the Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir, or whatever it is, the elected officials, the president of the community, who determines the board, who determine the needs of the tzibur and how much the budget is supposed to be. So then, once you determine the budget for said institution, so then you go around, you know, giving out the paper, sending out the emails, trying to collect the money. So the question is, do we ask for a certain amount of money from each individual, or does do the elected officials really have to do their research and determine, you know, who should be paying more than the others? So it sounds like there's elements of both from this Tshuva of Rav Moshe. So again, it's not on the source sheet, but it's in Choshen Mishpat Chelek Aleph, I believe, Simon Mem Aleph, one of those. Yeah. Any questions? Okay. Yashar koyach, everyone.